Morning. I'm the consequence. Nice to meet you. For better or for worse. No, so glad you're here. I am John Dixon, the pastor of student ministries here at North Park. So if we haven't had a chance to meet yet, it's my privilege to work with 7th through 12th graders and work with the volunteers to minister to them and their families. And so glad to be here. So first of all, if some of you that are here today stop by my house late last night or morning, and I wasn't up, I just want you to know I do appreciate the gifts, and I want you to know it didn't go unnoticed, all right? That's all I'm going to say. Hey, it is a transitional time for our church, especially if you're a guest. You've heard it mentioned about Pastor Michael and Stephanie having a baby and a house selling. So Pastor Michael, our lead pastor for the last 3 years, is transitioning out. They're going to be moving to North Carolina to pursue some other endeavors, church planning, and to go to school and to be by Stephanie's family. And so we are glad for them, but we're sad, and it's very hard to see them go, and we're not quite sure about the future. Michael has been preaching a series. It was five final words, and so we finished four, and next week he'll do the fifth. I was planning to speak next week and the following week, so I had 2 weeks. Michael, as a lead pastor, you know, that can read like six books in a week and is a lot more scholarly and stuff like that. So I tried to come up with something I thought would be helpful. So I came up with 2.5 words. So that's what I'd like to share with you, all right? And the 2.5 words are the next gen. So that's what I'd like to talk to you about this week. And then we'll skip a week and come back to it in just a couple of weeks. So I want to ask you guys a question. How many of you guys have got an upgrade on your phone recently? Or a new electronic device, or you got the next generation of a video game, right? It's a pretty common experience. Yeah, the kids now, video games waving, and a few of you 30-year-olds up in the balcony too. I see that. Is Jared here today? I don't think Jared's here. That's who I normally would tease about the video games, Jared Swartz. Friday was our day. My wife and I and my son, we went to Verizon. I've always been cheap, and so I don't really pay for an upgrade, and so I got my last two phones free. Because the next gen was coming out, so I took the one behind it. And so everything has kind of changed. And so my family has been excited to get the iPhone 7. And if you're not an Apple person, I'm just talking, all right? This is the story. So they got the 7s, and then they look at me like, what are you going to get? And I go, well, I'm going to get an SE. Well, what is an SE? Well, that's a 6 in the shell of a 5. And that's all I want. Because I don't want anything bigger than that to fit in my pocket or to keep track of, right? When we talk next gen, in fact, in Verizon's store, big poster on the wall, it was Verizon Next Generation. That was the big thing, right? So when we're talking technology and we talk about next gen, we're talking about the latest, the greatest, the new innovations, as long as you're willing to pay, right? That's what next gen is. Well, that's not what we're going to talk about this morning. We're going to talk about something that is much more important, much more valuable, something that makes a difference for all of eternity. Much longer lasting impact than our technology that we would upgrade. I'm going to ask some kids to help me out here. So while I continue to talk, I need 11 of the, what is it, fourth graders that are still in here? Fourth graders up through, or what's the youngest that's still in here? You can tell I know, right? Fourth grade, so I was correct. All right, like fourth through 12th grade. But the younger kids, if we can get enough, I need 11 of them. So if you guys want to make your way up, come on up to the platform here. As they come, this week and in another week, you want to grab that for me? Thank you. We're going to talk about our kids, our students, and our young adults. All right, you guys come right, line up across the front right here. Let's see, how many we got? Any of you guys can count? Do we have 11 yet? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think we need one more. They're all moving around. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We need one more. Any brave soul want to come? Here comes one right here, down the right-hand side there. All right. And the reason I want to talk about this, thanks, man. Appreciate, tell you what, you can stand right over here. We're gonna put you right here. You got a special purpose, all right? Good deal. All right. And several of you most of you may be aware of some of these statistics, all right? But the reason this is important and the reason we want to think about the next generation is because these kids and students that are represented up here, if statistics are right, some would say 50% of them, when they graduate from high school going to college, either will not be in church or they're going to walk away from their faith. All right? So how about, can you guys just go ahead and have a seat? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Just go ahead and sit down, okay? No, right here on the platform. Sorry. Sit right there. All right? Some would say 60%. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, go ahead and take a seat. Some would say as many as 70% of these kids and students who are here, of these 10, when they graduate from high school, will no longer be with us. So anywhere from 50 to 70. And that's just not a good thing, is it? You guys know how you etch a sketch? You know how you shake it all up and it erases? Let's do that. You guys all stand back up, okay? Now, let's just say it's 50%, all right? But even as we talk about the kids who are now in church, all of them, all 10 of them, 100% of the kids who are in church somewhere on a Sunday today, that still only makes up 25% of all of the kids that would be in our community or our country. So you two stay standing, you get down on one knee, all right? And then you guys slide down a little bit. So the 10 that we had up here before are represented by 25% of all the kids in our community or in our country. That leaves 75%. I want you to go ahead and get down on one knee, okay? Just the end there, just the last one. All right, you guys can stay up. So 75% aren't even in a church. We've never seen them. We've never met them. They don't know about Christ. And so not only are we concerned that we may not be keeping our own, but we're also concerned about the 75% here, that somebody needs to reach them and tell them about Jesus. And that's why we want to talk about this the next couple of weeks, all right? Hey, you guys stand up. In spite of my bad directions, you guys did a great job, right? Let's give them a hand. You guys can head back to your seats. So we want to talk about next gen, because the goal as Christians has always been to pass our faith on to the next generation, hasn't it? It's to make sure not only that the truth of Christianity gets to the next generation, but that it gets implanted in the hearts of the next generation. Hasn't the goal always been that the generation that comes after us would stand on our shoulders, that they would springboard off of what we've done and what we've given them so that they could impact the world for Christ? That's always been the goal. And so here at North Park, we're thankful. We have great support for our kids and students and our young adults. We commit a number of resources, some of which I'm a part of. And we have what we call specialists. I'm a student pastor. We have a children's director. We have people who work with our, we call it college and career class, right? So we bring people who have a certain understanding or expertise about a certain age group to invest in them. We've got, I know it's over 100, I'm guessing it's over 150 volunteers that are involved in those three ministries alone. It's the bulk of the volunteers that we have. And we thank each and every one of you that serve in one of those three ministries. So we give a lot of attention to it because it is important. If you want to get any of our children's ministry workers upset, just tell them that what they're doing is childcare or babysitting. Or if you want any of our volunteers from Breakaway or our Levita class to be upset, just tell them that basically, we're involved in sin management. We're just trying to make sure that kids don't get in too much trouble and somehow they can survive the high school years. Because we're interested in much more than that. We want to get this vibrant Christian faith, this relationship that we have with God, to the next generation. I was thinking about kids and some of the things we did with our kids. And we played a game called Pictionary. Any of you guys ever play Pictionary? I had to go downstairs and find our board game. I pulled it out. Pictionary was a game where you had teams, and one person would look at a card, and based on the color that you were on, yellow was people, blue was objects, The tan was an action. Green was difficult. And when your team's turn came and you were to draw, you had to look at the word and then that little sand timer and you would flip it over and you had time to draw to try to get them to say the word, right? It's always interesting if you play with people who come from a different country, like Canada. So one day we're playing with our friends from Canada and I'm trying to draw a bum. I'm drawing a guy laying in the gutter. I'm not a very good, you know, drawer. I'm trying to draw him all scraggly with a beard and different things like that. And the time runs out and I tell him what the word is and then I find out in Canada, a bum is like your rear end. And so our friend just draws a little bump and it's like, it's obvious it's a rear end. Why did you just draw that? Who knew? I was new to Michigan too, so I wasn't familiar with that. Another one was, sorry to be a little crass, but the word was throw up. And I was trying to draw that. And then afterwards they said, oh, that's bring up. I said, that's what they call it in Canada. I don't know. It's called bring up. So it was always challenging when you played the game. But there was one particular turn at the very bottom. There's kind of this pinkish color there. Anybody remember what that color was? It was an all play. And that meant not just your team got to participate, but everybody got to participate. All the teams. Everybody was in. And as we talk about this morning and next week, some of you who aren't in one of those particular ministries, or maybe you're single or you're not yet married, or maybe you're married with no kids or you're older, you might be tempted to go, hey, this isn't really for me. But I want you to know this morning, this is an all play. Every single one of you, from kids to students, to young adults, to middle age, to older, single, married, everyone has a role to play when we think about reaching the next generation and passing on this faith that we have. The next generation matters to God and it matters to us. And that emphasis is reflected in Scripture. In Luke chapter 1, it says that God's mercy extends from generation to generation. Exodus 3, God's name is to be remembered from generation to generation. Psalm 71, God's power is declared to the next generation. And Psalm 145 says God's works are commended to the next generation. I want to invite you to turn with me to the book of Psalms. And if you're not familiar with your Bible, here's a table of contents up on the screen. The book of Psalms. And there I want to read with you a few verses from Psalm 78. And I want you to see how Scripture reflects this priority that those who are walking in relationship with God now are concerned about passing it on, not only to the next generation, but the generation after that and the generation after that. So Psalm 78, and we'll begin in verse 4. I'm reading from the New Living Translation, and it's on the screen for you as well if you need it. It said, we will not hide these truths from our children. The truths described in the verses previous to this are those truths about God and who He is, the lessons that they've learned. It says, we're not going to hide these from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord and about His power and His mighty wonders. For He issued His laws to Jacob and He gave His instructions to Israel. This is first given to the nation of Israel. He commanded our ancestors to teach them to their children. Now notice verse 6. So the next generation might know them, even the children not yet born, and they in turn will teach their own children. You see the four generations there? The generations that receiving this, He wants their kids to know it, and then the kids that are not yet born, so they'll teach it to their generation. So this has always been God's plan, and it's the plan given to us as the church as well. Verse 7, so that each generation should set its hope anew on God, not forgetting His glorious miracles and obeying His commands, then they will not be like our ancestors, stubborn, rebellious, and unfaithful, refusing to give their hearts to God. So each and every generation matters to God. And the generation before it has a responsibility to pass on a vibrant relationship with God, the glorious truths about who He is and what He's done, so that it can continue to go from generation to generation to generation until Jesus comes again. And so that's why we're talking about next gen, because every generation matters for God. So as we talk about that this morning, this is huge for us. It not only changes what we do now, but it will also determine who we become as a church, if we continue as a church. Because if we don't reach the next generation or the generation after that, we may not have a church as those of us who hold to the truth of Jesus Christ get older. And if there's not another generation to pass it to, then we could cease to exist in that chain. So this morning, I just want to have five different conversations with you, short ones. Michael had five words. I've got 2.5, but 5 conversations, all right? This morning with the high school, we're just trying to get them talking. We're talking about sharing your faith. So I gave them 30 seconds to pick their favorite subject and talk about it. And so high schoolers, I know it's not fair. I'm going to take like a half hour for mine. I gave you 30 seconds, and I get 30 minutes to talk about what has been my life for the last 28 years. And to just share with you some things that I've learned over that time. And so this is a conversation. Some of these things we are doing well at North Park. Some of these things we may say, I haven't thought about that. There might be some things we say, wow, we really need to change some things in order to be more effective in reaching that next generation. So let's start with conversation number one, is that we need to have a plan. So the video that we watched, there was a couple different people in there. There was an architect. There was a cook. What else was in there? A farmer. And then at the end, it was parents, right? And I would add to that, church. So we need to have a plan. This is too important for us as a church not to have a strategy for it. All right, so here's traditionally, this is our plan. We have a kids ministry, we have a student ministry, we have a college and career ministry, which is kind of like young adults after college, right? And each of those look at how can we best minister to this particular group of people that we have. And that's not a bad thing. In fact, right in the middle of it, you see that's me, student ministry. And I've been a part of these kinds of ministries over the years, right? But also in the middle of those ministries, I began to realize that there probably was more that we could do. There was a better approach than each of us just kind of doing our own thing. Because when we do our own thing, we set our own objectives. We use our own language. We partner with parents in our own way. And what happens a lot of times is we end up competing for volunteers. We compete for budgets. We compete for facilities. And we compete for the calendar. And in meaning to be helpful to those we're trying to reach and to their families, we can end up just running them ragged or having competing goals. So maybe a better way to do it is this next slide, which some are now calling next gen ministry. And that is to say we have a kids ministry, a student ministry, and a college and career. Nothing changes there, but they overlap. And there's transitions that are thought through from one ministry to the next. There's a partnering with families in a common way. So there's a common language. There are common goals and objectives. And the leaders from each of those ministries sit around the table regularly and discuss what is it we're trying to produce in our kids and students and young adults so that we can increase the percentages of the number of students who stick with their faith so that we can increase the opportunity to reach those who are not yet a part of our church. All right, and that gives us an opportunity to do two things. Specifically, we have a unified vision then. So we're working together to have a unified vision. And then secondly, we can collaborate. There's some collaboration. So it's not completely different from what maybe we have done before, but it gives us a much greater opportunity to work together and to look at the ministry from cradle to college as one. And we can work together, all right? So that's all I'm going to share about that. We've been trying to work on that, and we hope to do much more with that so that we can be more effective, so that we have a better plan to do that, all right? But I want to share a couple other things with you, so we're going to move on. That's conversation number one. Conversation number two may surprise you. There's a couple different books that have come out here. One is called Sticky Faith, and another one called Growing Young. They're both done by the Fuller Institute, and they came out about a year apart, 2010 and 2011. And they are research books. They did serious studies of evangelical churches to try to discover what would help our kids' faith stick better. Or the second one is called Growing Young. They've discovered that when churches that are doing well, when they look for factors that indicate their health and that they're doing well, it's just not that they have younger people there, but it's what they're doing together in their focus not only helps reach the next generation, but it increases the vibrancy of all of the church. And then the other one is called Parenting Beyond Capacity. So I want to share with you a couple of things that come from those books. Now, when they did this research, they didn't start out with any objectives. But what they identified were some key factors of churches that were successful in reaching the next generation. So you might say, oh boy, here it comes. We need the latest and greatest entertainment. We need more money. We need all cool, young, hip guys like Pastor John to work with our teenagers, right? Did you know we have people working with our teenagers from age in the 70s all the way down to the 20s? It's not about programs and budgets and money and entertainment. So all the things that we would think sometimes that this is what's going to draw kids and that's how we're going to reach them. Not that some of those things can't be useful. But here was the number one indicator. They tried to find like a silver bullet. What's that one thing that would really help us reach the next generation? Are you guys ready for it? Here it is. Worship together. Worship together. They didn't find necessarily a silver bullet, but they said the closest thing that they could find was a church where the kids, the students, the young adults, all of the adults worship together in a worship service. Here's a quote from the book. It says, "Involvement in all church worship during high school is more consistently linked with mature faith in both high school and college than any other form of church participation." Does that surprise you? That surprised me. That's a high value that we have here at North Park. We want to all join together in the worship service. But they're saying what is modeled and the relationships that we have when we come to worship together is probably the biggest factor that they could find as to why kids stick and why they continue. Now, if I had started off by saying, hey, I want you guys to know, we figured out there is one thing that if we do this right and we do this well, we will have the greatest chance of changing those percentages of kids who are going to leave our church. Without me even telling you what it was, wouldn't you say, we've got to figure that out and do it? Well, I'm telling you, and we need to do it. Some of it we might be doing well. It causes some tension, doesn't it, when we say all generations are going to worship together. And I'm not even saying what the worship style should be, what the worship service should be like. I just want to say, if that is one of the leading factors, then somehow we as adults should take the lead, and we should just say our worship service should involve input from our kids and our students and our young adults and all of us together. And the discussions that we have should be a part of the process of us communicating to them that it's very important that this momentum of them being the next generation that continues on takes place. And we need to not be so concerned about our individual preferences, whatever they are. But we've got to open up that communication, because the leading indicator of whether our generation, the next generation, is going to stick is when they worship together. All right, there's a second one. And that is that we need to help them serve. Help them serve. Now, we've been talking about this and we've worked on this quite a bit. But again, one of the things that they found almost as equal to that is that when we let kids and students and young adults serve in the church, then they are more likely to stick. Here's a quote from this is a book that's quoted in the Parenting Beyond Our Capacity. It says, community service was significantly more closely related to the faith development of teens than attending worship services. Service appears to be more powerful than Sunday school, Bible study, or participation in worship in the faith development process. So you might say, well, I thought you just told me the worship together was the most important. I think probably this is just a little bit different. They're just saying a worship service in general. The first one was saying, hey, when you worship together. But either way, these are like the close one and two. So of all the things that we could say as a church, what should we do to help keep the next generation here? Number one is worship together. The second one is help them serve. Give them a place in the church to serve. So we've tried to work at this in our student ministry in different ways, and the church has been good about giving some opportunities. But I think that we still hold on to the fact that in our minds, discipleship equals a classroom. And what these statistics are telling us is that more important than being in a classroom, not that that's not important than learning, more important than Sunday school or a Bible study, even more important than just us being here together, if it's not linked together with giving them a way to live out their faith, then it doesn't have near the impact that it can. She also added that when you put a student or a kid alongside an adult in serving, then the impact is increased. So I love this morning, our worship team that we had up here. Matt looks like he's 17, but he's really in his 20s. We had a group of younger kids and students. The others on the team, I won't say their ages, but all of them are at least 30 or above. All right? What a wonderful look that is of how ministry should take place. So I'm not opposed to having special nights where you have kids serve or students serve, but really what will make the biggest impact is when you come in the parking lot and there are students and kids serving alongside adults that greet you at the door and open it. That there are students and kids that are helping to usher alongside an adult. That there are students and kids and young adults helping with the tech ministry, the music ministry. That they're serving in the regular church, if you will. And they're serving alongside adults because that changes the way they see things. One other factor that came out was very interesting. And that was, let's look at this quote here. Older kids' involvement in children's ministry seems to be more than just babysitting, it's faith building. In their research, they found that when older kids work with younger kids, it was a huge step forward in their faith. And I think that's because they realized now that there was somebody who was looking to them. It gave them an opportunity to be a model for them, an example for them. So a lot of the times I know, and I just talk openly with our students, I know not all of them are motivated to go and serve with kids. Some of them don't want to hear me speak when I'm in here. They don't want to go to big church, so to speak. And that's okay. But when we connect them to younger kids as a part of this serving, it helps their faith be more sticky. All right, a fourth conversation that is tied to the others, and the way that they stated it is that it prioritizes young people. Prioritize young people. Where? In their student ministry, in kids' ministry, in the Levita class? No, everywhere. And what they mean by that is this. Here's a quote from the book. It says, when you think of budget and strategy and worship planning and programming, community life, theology, and all other aspects of church life, they think of young people. They intentionally pay attention. So all that means is this. Wherever you're serving, whenever we as a church have conversations about what we do and how we do it, somebody should be saying, how does that impact the kids? How does that impact our Levita class? How could we get the students involved? It's simply paying attention and being concerned about how those things will impact young people in the church, prioritizing them. So it's more than just saying, hey, we're going to have a ministry for them, we're going to hire somebody, we're going to have a budget. It's thinking about them throughout the whole church. And not only is that good for them, but it's good for everybody. Here was one quote from a pastor at a church. He said, young people are like salt. Where they are included, they make everything taste better. Now, I'm not sure Mark Twain would agree, because maybe you know that he said when a kid gets 12, you should put him in a barrel and cut a hole in it to feed him. And when he turns 16, just plug the hole. And maybe you feel that way. Maybe you just don't get kids. Maybe teenagers drive you crazy. Maybe these millennials drive you bonkers, right? And we're talking like this is such an easy and a good thing to do. And you're like, it's not like that. But remember our goal. This isn't saying that the other age groups don't matter. This is saying, let's remember the goal, though. The goal isn't just for us to be healthy. The goal is for us to pass this on to the next generation. So we've got to think about that in every piece of our church. And the research found that churches who did that, it made a huge impact. To pay attention. Let me just share with you. We have to be genuine in that. When we talked about the worship service, when we talk about giving them opportunities to serve, they really need to know that they are needed and invited into this participation. They need to know they have a load-bearing ministry. In other words, they're really part of it. Because when we don't, they know it. So I got an email this week from a friend who's dealing with a situation. And I asked him about it. How do the younger people feel about what the older people are doing? Here's what he sent back. He said, every time they acknowledge the need to let the younger voices have a place at the table, they quickly add, and the younger people need to take the advice of the older generation. Now, is that true? Do the younger generation need to take the counsel and wisdom and experience of the older? And I want you to know we work very hard at that. This past summer, we invited some of the best, oldest people we know, John and Joni Clausen. I'm just kidding, Joni, wherever you are. No, we invited them in because we were talking about the wisdom and listening to the experience of older people. So we're teaching our kids that. But they're never going to believe that they are genuinely needed and wanted in the conversation if we always have to add real quickly, but you need to listen to us. And so here's what he said. When the second statement is mentioned, the younger people need to listen to the older. That's when you hear the amens. So very few amens on, hey, we need to listen to the younger generation and get their input and involve them and let them genuinely participate. Very few amens. But when the clause is added and the younger need to listen to the older, then that's when all the amens come. Needless to say, you know who still holds the reins in setting direction. And so that's what they found in their research. That when younger generation were genuinely invited in, and it was communicated that we need you, and we want to give you some responsibility. Now, not every kid is ready for every responsibility. Not every young adult is ready for that. But the goal is to train them. It's to include them. And they have to know it's real. And they know when it's not. And the problem is that scares some of us. They're not always going to get it right. It is messy. But over time, what they offer is very valuable. And they are the ones who have to take the reins, and so we have to make sure that they're ready when the time comes. All right, last conversation is make them feel valued and welcomed then. Valued and welcomed. What do we have to do to make them feel valued and welcomed? Here's the incredible thing. Remember I said this was all play. When they interviewed these young adults and students, said, how can the church make you feel valued and welcomed? Number one way, just take an interest in trying to get to know us. Wow. That's it. That was their answer. The ones who felt valued and welcomed in their church, adults, and those outside of student ministry, because they expect it from us to some degree. And we even talk about trying to show up in their lives outside of our program in our building and how much that can mean to them. But just showing an interest in trying to get to know them. Most student ministries, little secret here, if you were to go to college with me and we talked about student ministry and how to be effective, we would talk about something called the 1-to-5 ratio. This is top secret. I usually don't share this. So don't tell everybody, all right? But we usually say we're going to try to have enough leaders where one leader basically can work with 5 students to try to make it more personal. So you can see it's not really rocket science, right? What if we flipped that and instead talked about a 5-to-1 ratio? This was something that came out of the research. What if instead of one adult for every 5 kids, we said we want every kid and student and young adult in our church to have 5 adults that invest in them at different levels? So we're not saying 5 student minister leaders or 5 children. We're saying in the whole church, what if they had 5 adults who knew their name, who took some time to welcome them, who sat down and got to know them, that invited them out to do something, to just say, hey, you know, I'm so glad you're part of our church. I want you to know I'm praying for you. In addition to a leader in their particular ministry, in addition to maybe a pastor. And the research that they did showed that this made such a huge impact because they felt valued and welcomed. So it doesn't take a big budget. It doesn't take the next latest and greatest thing. Through all of these, what stands out is what makes the biggest difference in what they're dying for is simply a relationship with people who care. A church that has a plan to involve students and kids and young adults with the adults in the church. I'll just mention this one last thing. For the young adults in college age, they said for one, the first semester of college, if they get one contact from people from the congregation, not in their student ministry, but just one contact first semester for students who go away to college, that made a huge impact. And even 3 years later, it was still making a difference in the life of that college student. So it's not always the big things. It can be the small things. All right, let's wrap up then. Some of you are going like, well, what about the parents? This is all about the church. I'm so glad you asked. And I hope you'll come back in 2 weeks. All right? Because here's what I want to say. No one has the potential to influence a child more than a parent. That's the way God's designed it. No one has more potential to impact a child than a parent. But secondly, I don't know if you guys can read that. The font's a little dark there, but it says, but parents aren't the only influence a child needs. Your kids are going to become teenagers. And for those of us that have parented teenagers or worked with them, you might have noticed there's a switch that goes off where they think they know everything. And I can come and tell your teenager something, and they go, wow, I never thought about that. That is awesome. And the parents stand in the background going, I told you that every day for a year, right? God has designed our kids, and in our culture, as they go through adolescence, it points towards independence. In fact, when we struggle and they won't leave, we know something's not right, right? It's just part of the process. God has designed it so that we prepare them and send them out. So all of us as parents need other adults to come alongside and to help us. Because there'll be times when our kids don't want to talk with us. It may not be that it's not that they don't like us, that they don't appreciate us. They just need another voice. So as parents, we'll talk about this next week or in 2 weeks, you don't need to put undue pressure on yourself to do this all by yourself. I don't believe God designed it that way. And I'll share more about that in a couple of weeks. So, no one has the potential to impact a kid more than his parents. Yes. Today we're focusing on the fact, but we need other people. And so here's what I believe. And some of you hear us talk about orange philosophy and orange, and this is basically a summary of it. The two combined influence will make a greater impact than just two influences. And so, sorry to you math majors, but 2 is greater than 1 plus 1. And what we mean by that is there is tremendous power in the life of a kid, a student, a young adult, when the church and the home partner together. And they have a plan. And parents are willing to widen the circle to include other adults in the church. And the church is willing to recognize we've got to reach this next generation. So there are some things that we need to focus on. Home and church don't need to be adversaries. We can work together. All right, so it's all play. Let me just give you 3 simple things you can remember, all right? Will you guys do this for me? Every week when you come here, will you find a kid, a student, or a young adult and just greet them? Tell them you're glad they're here. All right? Everybody can do that? I'll play, right? Number two, in your bulletin, there is a list of college students. Are we considered college age? Some of them are away. Some of them are here. But would you commit that within the next couple of weeks that you'll contact them with a letter, an email, a text, and just let them know you're thinking of them and you're praying for them? All right? Can we all do that one? All right, last one. If you are serving in a ministry or a team here at North Park, as you look for more people to involve, will you think about how you could involve kids, students, or young adults? And if they join your team, will you celebrate that with them? And will you help develop them? And I'm confident if we did those three things, so simple, with the background and understanding of what we talked about, we'll change those percentages. Because kids will come to know Jesus. Kids will know the value of the church, and they will feel a part of it. And that will increase those chances tremendously. D.L. Moody was a famous evangelist. One day he got back from a meeting, and they said, "How many conversions did you have?" And he said, 2.5. Oh, 2 adults and 1 kid? He said, no. 2 kids and 1 adult. Because the adult's life is half over. Our kids are important. Our students are important. Our young adults. The next generation matters. Will you pray with me? God, thank you for your love and your goodness, for your work. Thank you for a church that I know does love and is concerned for the next generation. God, I pray for every child, every student, every young adult here today. God, I pray that they would see in us how great you are, how loving, how kind. I pray that they would know we want them here. Help us to be wise in how we interact with them and what we communicate and how we involve them. God, we long so much for your son to come back. So we know that our time is short, but in that time, help us to be faithful and help us to be focused on the next generation. That's an honor and a privilege for us. May you bless us with success so that the odds are changed. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.